bring people of different parties together, to bridge partisanship, to build trust, to show American citizens of both parties and different ideologies that we can come together and have civil discourse in this country.
Our conversation today focuses on rhetoric, specifically political rhetoric. Anywhere you go today, people are demanding less rhetoric in our society. Dr. Lauren Harding is a political science professor at Tennessee Tech. Lauren, thank you for being with us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Let's start with a definition. What is political rhetoric?
Absolutely. Political rhetoric is how we engage in discourse surrounding government and politics. So the way that we speak when we're talking about political issues.
Is it limited to just politicians, or is it all of us?
Absolutely not. Political rhetoric happens in all parts of society, from conversations between friends, colleagues, workplaces, schools. All of us can engage in and are engaging in political rhetoric.
So rhetoric, if you think back to ancient times, rhetoric is a very ancient creation. I mean, it's been around forever, correct?
Absolutely. When you go back to, the heart of democracy in ancient Athens, or when you go back to, looking at famous speeches from politicians like Cicero in ancient Rome, the heart of discourse, public discourse, political discourse is old.
When someone says, "We have too much political rhetoric," is that a true term, or what do they actually mean when they say that?
I think that people are tired of the heat of political rhetoric, the conflict of political rhetoric in today's climate. In addition, I would say that, comparing the modern moment to past decades, we are more exposed to political rhetoric in different forms constantly. So the 24-hour news cycle, social media, it's not just, the nightly news, but we're literally being bombarded with political rhetoric all the time, and also contextualized in a very negative and conflictual way. As the press looks for that soundbite that is going to play, and as social media draws us into the algorithms and that create echo chambers where we're constantly hearing messages, not neutral messages, but more and more extreme messages that link to our own belief and ideology.
Are you putting out there that maybe the amount of rhetoric is not really any different, that we just hear it more?
Yes, I would contend that that is definitely the case. And interestingly, when you kind of look at some history and context, that it's been used strategically and purposefully by politicians, that 24-hour news cycle, and even going back to Newt Gingrich in the 80s when C-SPAN coverage got expanded, he would strategically go in and make speeches on the House floor when nobody was there, so that whatever controversial soundbite would be picked up and be in the news cycle and get talking points for the next day. So it's become a political tool to say something controversial. The media is not looking for a neutral statement. They're not looking for something that that just shows both sides of the coin. They're looking for something that is somewhat controversial, because that's gets clicks, that gets views, and that's kind of the media climate that we're in right now.
I want to come back to that, because that's an interesting point. Dr. Laura Harding is a political science professor at Tennessee Tech. Our subject today is political rhetoric. Admit it, there are times when you say, golly, can we not just all get along? Political rhetoric is our discussion today as we talk with Dr. Lauren Harding from Tennessee Tech. She's a political science professor. It does seem there is one difference. politicians today seem to be looking for hot button issues, whether or not those issues are truly all that important in the total scheme of our lives. But they know that touching on this issue will elicit responses. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. You know, politics is somewhat strategic. Politicians are trying to gin up support from their base. They're trying to get people engaged. And, you know, increasingly, and again, these tactics have, they were used by Newt Gingrich to the Republican Party to win back the House in 1994, turn to social issues, turn to the things that people get emotional about, that they, you know, care about deeply, and use those as wedge issues to build support for the party. It was very successful in the Republican take back of the House in 1994. And that was just the beginning. And we see both sides of the aisle using those hot button issues that, again, they're not really at the center of the important questions of politics in America, the big problems that we need to solve. But they are the hot button issues that that get people talking, that get people upset or mobilized.
Are they even issues that people really care about? Or oftentimes are they issues that are just used to scare people?
I'd say that, you know, a lot of the issues are issues that people care deeply about. Issues like abortion, issues like Second Amendment rights. Those are things that are two of the biggest hot button issues on both sides of the aisle that people do care very deeply about. And yet in the conversations, you know, that we hear about those in the media, they're approached from a very conflictual way. The rhetoric that we use about those is very conflictual. Both sides of the aisle on both of those issues say the other side wants to take away your rights. And so, you know, our approach is not compromise. It's conflict.
Why does it seem we don't have compromise today?
Absolutely. When we, you know, look at the political spectrum right now, we are highly polarized. And polarization is very interesting to look at because the American people are actually not that polarized. We believe that we're polarized. We think that the Americans who are on the other side of the aisle, who don't share our party affiliation, are so different from us, so far from us. But that's not actually the case. But what is true is that we have effective polarization, which is we don't like each other, that we literally, and this is from a Pew study, see the other party as closed-minded, dishonest, unintelligent, and even immoral. And that's just regular Americans. But when we look at the elites, the politicians, they are highly polarized. Ideologically, pulling to the far left and the far right, leaving no one left in the center for that bipartisanship, for that compromise, for that moderation. And we see that at the political elite level, we're more polarized or as polarized as we were at the end of the Civil War.
You've brought up Newt Gingrich. I'll take it back another decade or so. And you think back to Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, who politically are on two opposite ends of what they believe is the right place for government and the way that government should be involved. And yet they were able to get in a room and seemingly talk it out and come up with a compromise. And neither one got everything that they wanted, but both of them got something. That seems like such a foreign thought to what we try to do today in modern politics.
That's absolutely correct. Because today, compromise for a politician makes it look like you're talking to the enemy. No politician, hardly worth their salt, wants to be seen as a friend of the other party. And that's problematic. That's deeply problematic. And I see a few politicians standing up against that trend. And interestingly, one is from Tennessee. Representative Tim Burchett recently has been in the media talking about his friend Cortez. That's AOC, one of the most progressive members of the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives. And he says, yeah, we don't agree at all on political issues, but he's showing respect for her as a human being, as a colleague. And that is what is missing from today's politics. And another example of that is Utah's governor, who has been doing some political advertising, sitting down with, so he's a Republican, and sitting down with Nevada's governor, who is a Democrat, and saying, hey, we don't agree on a lot of things, but we are friends, and we do have common ground on important things like our love of this country and our respect for democracy. And, you know, being able to respect each other, speak to each other with respect, see each other's common humanity and shared values, as well as talking through our disagreements civilly. Those are some things that are missing in our political discourse right now.
Back to the point you made. Is that because it's being played out in an arena like social media that's causing this? It's more like sports. It's more like Alabama, Tennessee football than it is, you know, these are important issues that need to be worked through.
Absolutely. I think you make a really good point. What's changed? And one thing that has changed is that it's all public. You know, you used to be able to, I'd say that politicians, representatives used to be able to, you know, sit down, have conversations, hash out differences, and it wouldn't be covered in the media. Whereas today, the 24-hour news cycle, so much more focus and coverage of politics is bringing that to the spotlight. But also, you know, we see these politicians taking advantage of in the news, highlighting and maximizing, you know, conflict and controversy. And also the media uses narrow casting. So we see news being framed from a perspective. We see this in cable news with Fox and MSNBC. And this plays into citizens' confirmation bias, right? That we are more likely to accept information that we already agree with, right? That we agree with that comes through our own worldview and lens. And so, you know, this plus social media that, again, creates the echo chamber, all of this is playing into a media context that is more fraught than it was several decades ago.
I want to challenge you on that when we come back with Dr. Lauren Harding. She is a political science professor at Tennessee Tech. Political rhetoric is our discussion. Dr. Lauren Harding is a political science professor at Tennessee Tech. You brought up the media part of this, and the media deserves a lot of the blame for this, that we lump in the media. And the truth is that Fox and MSNBC, and even to some degree today, CNN, operate not as traditional news outlets. They operate as opinion pieces, much like opinion magazines of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. And yet they are all lumped together. And what I find interesting is that those who believe that Fox is telling the truth, or those who believe that MSNBC is telling the truth, seemingly don't see that they're being fed their beliefs.
That's very true.
They don't see it.
Absolutely. And again, that plays into our confirmation biases. I think that it also plays into just a loss of faith in the media, as well as, you know, loss of trust and confidence in many other American institutions across government and as well as in the private sector. But when you hear the same story being covered at two totally different angles that appear to be conflicting with one another, as an American, you ask yourself, well, what's true? I'm not sure what's true. And that's a very difficult place, I'd say, for an American citizen to be in, is having to question, you know, whether the information that I'm receiving is biased, whether it's factual. And really, as Americans, we need to go out and find alternative sources, check our sources, look for information being presented from different angles so that we can make better decisions and be better informed.
But I would also argue that it also is not a good thing to be reinforced over and over and over and over again. If your thought is closed-minded or very narrow on this decision, if I believe that your blazer is orange and it's not, but if I keep telling myself it's orange, then guess what? It's orange, even though it's black.
Absolutely. And the difficulty there is that additional information is necessary to challenge that. But where is the additional information going to come from? If I'm only tuned into Fox, if I'm only tuned into MSNBC, I keep hearing the same story over and over, the same narrative about what's going on in politics. Who's challenging that narrative? And the same thing is true on social media. Once you've clicked a couple stories leaning right, once you've clicked a couple stories leaning left, that's all you're going to see. The algorithm feeds you more of what you're interested in. You're not being challenged. The perspective that you're forming is not being challenged. You don't get the whole story.
And you take that plus the fact that it's being framed in a look at the evil decisions that the people on the other side are going to make.
Absolutely. And I think that that is a very important part of this conversation, is that we see our political elite legitimizing political violence, basically, by using dehumanizing language. So, for example, we have heard Trump regarding the January 6th riot saying, "Stop the steal, fight like hell." In the 2024 election cycle, we heard him saying things like calling Democrats Marxists, calling them vermin, and consistently saying the Democrats are a threat to democracy. Now, flip the party page, right? We have also heard Harris and Biden using similarly dehumanizing rhetoric, calling Trump a fascist, calling him Hitler-esque, calling him unhinged, incompetent, calling Republicans and Trump a threat to democracy. And so when we hear that kind of escalation of extreme political rhetoric, that creates a dangerous environment in the United States, right, where we have seen, violence escalate, right? Most recently, we saw the assassination of Charlie Kirk. But we go back and we saw shootings of Minnesota lawmakers. We saw an arson attack on Pennsylvania governor, shooting at the CDC headquarters, two assassination attempts on Trump, and then going all the way back to, the riots on January 6th. We are seeing increased political violence in the United States since 2016, and particularly since 2020. And this links back to the rhetoric that's being used by our partisan elites. We have to get out of our echo chambers as Americans, that we have a responsibility and a duty to be well informed so that we can hold our politicians accountable. One of the things that research shows is that when we hear extreme political rhetoric coming from someone in our own party, rather than saying, "No, we don't accept that," we say, "Oh, this is how we talk in our party now. This is how we think in our party now." We accept those in-party cues. And as Americans, we need to put our hand up and say, "No, we don't accept those cues anymore. We don't talk like that. We use civil discourse. We speak with respect. We see each other's common humanity."
Dr. Lauren Harding from Tennessee Tech, thank you so much for the education today.
My pleasure.